Thank you, Sunshine. My name is Billy, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Billy.
This room is packed as far as I'm concerned. This is really a bunch of good sobriety energy in the room, and if sobriety is good energy, and I'm not saying physically, I'm saying life-affirming, like we're about life, we're about living, and if there wasn't any meaning to life, then sobriety doesn't mean anything. And in the old days, I swore it off in the morning, and by sometime in the afternoon, I did leather work, and right next door was some alcoholic mechanics, and a half a block away was the liquor store, and they would say, "Hey, we'll buy if you fly." And I had made a backpack that would hold a 12-pack of beer, and it had room on top to lay down a bottle of vodka and a bottle of cranberry juices, which the alcoholic next door wanted. And I was a half a block from Carrillo Street in downtown Santa Barbara between De La Vina and Bath. And I would hop on my bike and jet through traffic, which was pretty light in those days, get to the liquor store, and there's probably two or three people in line, and I'd grab what I need and put it in my backpack and put exact change on the counter. And Casey, the owner or the manager, he knew me and he knew I was honest. And that was my status. I didn't have to stand in line at the liquor store. And there's people that, they won't go to the same liquor store because they don't want to be known as an alcoholic. And I went to the same liquor store, I didn't even hardly know I was an alcoholic. But in sobriety, after a while, I quit smoking. And I started hitting ice cream every night, or ice cream and a Sara Lee carrot cake, or ice cream and a pack of cookies, whatever it was. I went to different stores when I was going for ice cream. So that's kind of how I basically was. And before I get going too much, I want to acknowledge my higher power. And I want to acknowledge that I have a higher power today because of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I got here, I got a willingness to be sober, I kept it, and I kept it alive to this day, and I learned how to stay sober for a day. I stayed sober for a day, and then another day, and I remember when I had 20-some days, that really heavy idea, like, I can never ever drink again if I want to stay sober, if I want this life. I can't drink ever again, and that's a heavy idea for someone that, alcohol is our emotional response to life, is my emotional response to life. Anyway, I realized two things. One was one day at a time, which is what we do here. I'm not here staying sober for the rest of my life. I'm here capping off an amazing day staying sober. And the other thing I realized was I can't say I can't do it. And I'm pretty sure everyone in the room has more than a few days. So you can't say you can't do it, And I'm not sure. What's your name, by the way? Not to put you on the spot. No, to your left.
Glenn.
What is that?
Glenn.
Right on. Welcome, Glenn. I mean, you might have been here for a while, but I haven't seen you before. But do you have a few days sober?
About a month.
A month?
Right.
Right on. Okay. So let's see here. Yeah. So I realize I can't say I can't do it, and to me, it's important to emphasize that, if you have a few days sober, then it's not about can it be done. So it's like, why do it and how do we do it? And so Alcoholics Anonymous, through the steps, helped me get my spiritual life going on. And at this point, I'm going to hand out my card with my picture on it. A lot of you have seen it. A lot of you have it. If you want another one, here it is.
This is the old one.
Yeah, that's me in the old days. Me in the old days. Oops, picture's worth a thousand words.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on my drunk a lot. I want to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to remind us all that back in 1935 or so,
I'm gonna have a formal meeting.
They wound up having meetings in Akron, Ohio. And on Saturday, you need a new one. On Saturday night, or whenever it was, on a weekly basis.
Thank you.
They had a meeting, and it wasn't Alcoholics Anonymous. It was a meeting of alcoholics who knew how to stay sober.
Right.
And a meeting of alcoholics who were doing it. Did everyone do it?
Yeah.
Who's, you know, it's a meeting of alcoholics who were doing what it takes to be sober. That's in 1935 or 36 and so on. And we have a heritage here. And I want to emphasize that we take it for granted. We get sent here on court cards and things like that. And when we get a meeting directory, there's 100 meetings a week within 50 miles of here. But back then, it was people that were desperate to be sober, just desperate. And they got here, and the alcoholics that were sober here helped them to stay sober and to do what we do here. And back then when they started, I think it was 6 steps. And eventually, after 4 years, it was working pretty good. And they knew it was working, and they knew there's a lot of alcoholics that are dying left and right from alcoholism. And they had to get the message out there. Like, the experience that they had was God-given. I don't know if I said it already. Forgive me if I repeat myself, but... No, I don't think I did say it already. When I was a child, I grew up... I had 4 sisters on the day I was born. I had 8 sisters by the time I was 6 years old. And my brother came along when I was 8 years old. And it was a devout Catholic family. And I remember when I was a child, 10 years old or whatever, and I had a really good feeling about life and about what I would have to bring to life. And I had a sense of being able to help people see things how I saw them, because how I saw things was very beautiful. And I had an unshakable love of God. And by the end of my drinking, I had disdain for God if there was a God. I didn't believe in God, and if there was a God, I had disdain. My whole spiritual life disintegrated. And when I got here, I should kick in one other thing too. When I was 10 years old, in this big family, my dad was a traveling salesman. And we were there wasn't even really a whole lot of middle class back then. We were lower middle class, and we didn't have like dessert hardly ever. But once a month or so, he made fudge on a stovetop. And when I was 10 years old, because he was gone a lot, I was like the man of the house, right? You need a jar open, I do it. Going to the grocery store with my mom with coupons galore. We go to 4 or 5 different grocery stores, and I would carry the 50-pound sack of potatoes and all this stuff that's feeding 10 of us and so on. And anyway, it taught me how to make stovetop fudge. Mm. And I'll say a little bit more about that later. But today is November 18th, 2017. And, oh, God, did I start this? Yes, I did. So I'm recording it, and it'll be online. And it's not for my... edification. It's to edification of Alcoholics Anonymous and what is going on here. Because if I spend the whole time telling you about how messed up I got, I graduated high school in 67. My high school sweetheart moved 3,000 miles away. I thought we were going to get married and make babies, and she was going to school to get her degree to be a teacher, and Vietnam War was going on. And I was student body president. I had the top SAT score in the high school, and I would have been totally voted most likely to succeed. And I had no idea what I was doing with my life. My whole life had been about responding to others. You know, family members need something or this or that. Or when I was senior in high school, the school went through an accreditation and they needed someone to handle it. And it was Bishop High School in Santa Barbara, and they were short-staffed on priests and nuns. And they handed it off to me to handle. And it was like a 22-page questionnaire for all the students and all the faculty to fill out. And myself and I got a committee together. We passed them all out, got them filled out, collated the information, generated a report. And that's the nature of like for me, like I want to marry my high school sweetheart, make babies, and figure out life as you go along. Because I felt I was capable of figuring out life as I go along. I could add a scholarship to any university in the state of California, and the financials didn't get filled out by my dad. And I don't hold it against him, but the paperwork got buried on his desk somewhere. And my inner life about that was that someone else can have the spot I was going to have because I didn't need it. I can figure this out as I go along. And so anyhow, so I went to City College, had a student deferment. The war's going on. Eventually, I had a physical, passed the physical, got a telegram from the Marine Corps, said, you better join the Marines on Monday. This is a Friday about 5 p.m. You better join the Marines on Monday because otherwise you're going to get drafted into the Army. And on Monday, I went down to selective service and applied for conscientious objector. And it took a couple of years, and I got it, and I would have had alternative service. And the lottery came up, and they drafted to 195, and I was 199. But that whole part of my life, that life was beckoning and beautiful and so on. Well, from after high school, that's when I really started drinking and smoking dope and stuff like that. It was a long downhill thing. And I'm doing, I hope, a really short version of my story. But anyhow, so it was a long downhill thing. I was 26, got a drunk driving, was living in my car, had to go to National Council on Alcoholism. They suggest I go to a recovery house. There's an AA meeting at the recovery house that night. And they said, go to that meeting and find out who's in charge. And if you want to be sober, tell them you want to be sober and you need a bed. And I found out who to talk to. That's what I was paying attention to during the meeting. Who do I talk to get a bed? And I talked to them, and they said, sure. And so I had a bed in a recovery house. And while I was there, I got a job. And up till then, I'd just been odd things, you know, painting a house or just various, you know, ways of getting by. And let's see. Yeah, so I got a job. So after about 6 weeks, 4th of July came by, and there was a AA picnic and a company picnic, and I went to the company picnic. I wasn't plugged into AA. I was a good model resident at the recovery house. I was dotting my I's, crossing my T's, but I wasn't plugged into recovery. I remember one time sitting on a rock somewhere, and it popped into mind that I'm an alcoholic, and it didn't freak me out at all. It was just like, oh, that explains it, and that was it. I never struggled against alcoholism. And anyhow, so I went to the company picnic. It had been 6 or 8 weeks since I drank, so I knew a couple of beers wouldn't hurt me none. And I had a couple of beers and had to leave the recovery house. And 9 years went by before I got back to Alcoholics Anonymous. So for people that struggle in and out, my hat's off to you to get right back, get right back. I didn't, and so I wound up, you know, the guy in the photograph on the card. And that was from sometime in the year before I got sober. Anyhow, so 20 months before I got sober, there was this woman that I was seeing, and then we weren't seeing each other for a little while, but I was planning to see her again. And her car got washed off the road in a major storm in Santa Barbara and Refugio Canyon. And it was rough. It was like, I thought if I'd kill myself, I could be with her forever. And I remember I was renting a room from a guy that had a two-bedroom apartment, and we drank some beer and smoked some dope, and I had this vision of her in the room, and she was saying, live, just live. And so anyhow, 20 months later, my mom stops by my workshop, and this is, you know, I've been swearing it off every morning and in the afternoon, get going again. And she said, we noticed you haven't been happy for a while. And we saw this therapist. We'd see this therapist. And I've been thinking about seeing a therapist. The woman that drowned, she was like married but separated, and it's kind of an illicit relationship. I'd met her husband. I'd met her mom, her stepdad, and her dad, and these different people in her life. But I had no emotional or spiritual wherewithal to express condolences or reach out to them. Or, you know, I'm sure there was a big memorial for her, and I wasn't there. I never grieved it. And so anyhow, so I saw this therapist. And when I was, my mom had said, hey, would you see this therapist? And I said, sure. And I called the therapist. And that was October 1st, 1984. And I was quite sure she wanted me to not drink while I take care of my problems. Mm-hmm. And I'd been thinking about seeing a therapist just to process my grief, and that night I thought, and I'd never allowed myself to live since high school. I hadn't functioned on a high level since then, and by functioning on a high level, I just mean, you know, waking up, understanding what needs to be handled today, handle it. Say yes when life beckons, you know, say yes when an opportunity presents itself. You know, that's functioning. It doesn't mean, high level doesn't necessarily mean being the Pope or the President of General Motors. It just means showing up as we are as best as we can. And I hadn't done that. And so anyhow, I decided early to bed, early to rise, makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. And this is the evening of October 1st, and I had my last couple of Camel Straights and my last couple of beers. In those days, when I'd hit the grocery store, sometimes I'd get a chicken or a head of lettuce or whatever, along with the 12-pack and so on, and throw a couple of beers in the fridge and the chicken and the lettuce in the refrigerator and sit down in my small living room with a wood crate next to my chair and ashtray and a beer there, and there's a little black and white TV on another wood crate. And that was life some days. And then other days, I came home with a 12-pack and I got the rancid chicken out of the refrigerator and the rancid head of lettuce out of the refrigerator and tossed them out. And I never cooked the chicken. I don't know if I did or not, but I always thought it'd be a good idea to have some chicken. But anyhow, so it was either put fresh food in the refrigerator or throw stale food out. And that's what it was like. And I remember one day when I saw that there's a protein in beer, and that like opened the door for me. I remember when they started selling 12 packs. You know, I was drinking 6 packs, maybe one or two, and then they started, at 12 packs were more economical. Well, now I'm drinking 12 packs, and so on. So there was something wrong up here, something wrong in my thinking, something wrong in my awareness about life or myself and others and so on. And so anyhow, that evening, October 1, early bed, early rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. And I got to bed at 10 and I couldn't get to sleep. And I got up and I went to Safeway and I got a pack of Camel Straights and I got a pint of rum and a bottle of a liter of Coca-Cola. And came home, and about 11, I watched two movies, one from 11 to 1, I can't remember what that was, but from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock was a movie called The Heart is a Lonely Hunter with a guy named Alan Arkin in it. And I haven't seen it since, but I would like to go, I mean, I need to someday go back and look at it again, but that was a metaphor of how I was, what I was about, The Heart is a Lonely Hunter. And I remember the movie ended, and I'm looking at the clock, and it was 3:02 in the morning, October 2nd, and there was this much left in my glass, the bottle was empty, and I tipped it up and drank it. And it turned out that was my last drink, and that was 33 years ago. The way I like to say it is, like last October 2nd, I got a year sober for the 33rd time in a row. Being 33 years sober is like, can't do that. But probably half of us, or 40% of us in the room, have a year sober, and most of us many times again. And just the point for anyone in the room that's newer, I got a year sober because I got a day sober. I got a month sober because I got a day sober. I got a week sober because I got a day sober. And so we're not about getting weeks or months or years here. We're about getting a day. And so let's see here. The end of my drinking was like, if anyone's seen Forrest Gump and there's the feathers coming down to the park bench and he's sitting on the bench, yeah. That's me. Like some people wind up strapped in the psych ward or handcuffs or whatever, a total car wreck or whatever. And for me, it was just done. Anyhow, but it took 9 years for me to get there. So if you want to do alcoholism like I did, then go out tonight, come back in 9 years, and you'll just come in like a feather. No, if you survive. Anyhow, so that's my story. And saw the therapist the next day, talked about my friend that drowned, and shared my grief. And she asked me to not drink till I saw her next week. And I said yes. Now, where that came from, I don't know. I drank every day. I swore it off every day for a long time, and later on in the day, I always got started. And the reason I'm here tonight is because whenever I started, I kept going. There's a third step up there. Made a decision, turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understand God. And there's a lot of people that will balk at that. Oh, I'm not turning my will and life over to the care of nothing or whatever. But to know that when we drank, we turned our will and our life over to the care of whatever it was we were doing, you know. And so we're very good at turning our will and our lives over to the care of. So it's just a question of what do we turn it over to now, you know. So she asked me to not drink till I saw her the next week. And I said yes, and I was able to, and it was just grace. I had disdain for God before I got sober, but early on in sobriety, I had a sense that my willingness to be sober was a blessing, a gift, or some kind of grace. Not getting into any theology, not acknowledging God, just it's a blessing to want to be sober. And if you're here and you don't want to be sober, you have to be because of an ankle brace, or you have to be because of a court card, or you have to be because something, you know, an outside force is going to... and there's a time limit, you know, 18 months from now you'll be free from the restrictions and then you can drink again. Well, if that's why you're here, you're welcome, because if you need Alcoholics Anonymous, hopefully you'll get a good idea of what it's about here. And if you get here and you want to be sober, then we're all here to help you. And it's such a luxury to have, you know, just so many meetings around. Anyhow, so... I was willing to stay sober for a week. And the next week when I saw her, we started talking about alcoholism, and she gave me a book to read. Well, she asked me to read a book called Under the Influence, and it talks about four stages of alcoholism. And the first stage is having a large capacity to drink. Like I'm drinking with friends, and I'm worried about we're running out, and they're all fine. They each got two beers out of the six-pack, and I said, I only got two beers out of the six-pack, and there's three of us, you know. It's like, you sure you're going to have your second one? I need a third one, you know, or whatever. And, anyhow, so first stage is having a large capacity to drink. Second stage is using alcohol for emotional response to life. I'm bored. I'm pissed. I'll show them. Wow, I just got that done. I'm celebrating. I'm, you know, whatever it is, whatever the emotion is, it's time. You know, it's Miller time. And I was blessed with a gift that I want to share with you, because each of you can have it if you want it, I think. I don't know if it's a head trip or it's a reality trip or whatever, but I realize just because I'm sober doesn't mean we have to have prohibition. You know, everyone else that's not, you know, whoever wants to drink, drink. But I realize that these words follow within me. It's Miller time. It's Saturday night and I'm speaking at an AA meeting. It's Miller time. And I'm an alcoholic. And if I'm going to drink, which I love to drink... I like to bring a tall bottle of water here just to show off how much I love to drink. But I love to drink. But I'm an alcoholic. I have no illusions about that. So it's Miller time. I love to drink. And I have a bottle of water. You know, for me, it's usually water and coffee. I had health problems, I think, from sodas. There was a coincidence of a lot of Diet Coke and some digestive pain. And I don't know if they're related, but I assume they were. And I quit drinking sodas for the most part. But anyhow, so second stage is emotional response to life. Third stage is you got to have alcohol to function. And I did the arts and crafts show at the beach with a foot treadle sewing machine for a number of years. And the first couple of years during the end of my drinking, like the last couple of years of my drinking, I was running a foot treadle sewing machine doing leather work while you wait at the arts and crafts show on the beach in Santa Barbara. And when I was seeing the therapist and saw this, third stage, have to have alcohol to function, I thought I wasn't there yet. Mm-hmm. I was definitely on the progression. I definitely had a large capacity to use it for emotional response to life. But I didn't think I had to have it to function. Mm-hmm. And I drank my way through whatever relationships might have been turned into marriage or children or whatever. And so I didn't have dependence. And I was a few years sober when I realized I didn't have to function. You know, I didn't have a job where I had to be up at 7 to get there by 8 to whatever, whatever. And if I had, then maybe I would have needed a drink to function. But I was able to just sleep it off, get up. I would go to Caro's restaurant, it was right across the street, get a couple of cups of coffee to go, a newspaper and a pack of Camel Straights, and sit in my sewing machine and read the newspaper and smoke and drink coffee for a few hours while I'm not drinking today, until someone came in with a six-pack and said, hey, will you fix this? Mm-hmm. Or the alcoholic next door would say, hey, can you, you know, we'll buy if you fly. Anyhow, so that's the third stage. Okay, now fourth stage, you all can recognize this. Fourth stage is wet brain, cirrhosis, and death. Okay? And we're not, none of us are dead here. I don't know if anyone has cirrhosis, but it's not necessarily a death sentence if you do. It is if you keep drinking. And wet brain is an eventuality. You know, if we survive, if we don't wind up killing ourselves or being incarcerated or whatever, then we have wet brain to look forward to. And so we don't have to worry about whether or not we got our fourth step done. You know? And so anyhow, that's in that book, Under the Influence, which my therapist, with a week sober, gave me to read. And would I stay sober till I saw her the next week? And when I saw her the next week, she asked me, you know, we were talking about maybe my alcoholism, and asked me to call my brother-in-law, George Price. He passed away about 6-7 years ago in Santa Barbara. And he had invited me over the years. And he was married to my sister Sheila. And anyhow, I called him up and I said, hey, I'm ready to go to a meeting. And this is like 9 years-ish since I had been to a meeting. And he was delighted and went to the Tuesday Men's Stag. And when I was 4 months sober, I became the secretary. They needed a new secretary and they railroaded me into it. And I've had service commitments ever since. I've been plugged in ever since. And so I had two benefits when I got here. One was that I was just done. You know, I could have gone out, and if I had gone out, I would have gone wherever the alcohol took me. But I had an opportunity. This is like a train station. You know, like every morning, it's like we wake up in a train station. And we can get on the life train or the death train, and it's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. You know, if you really want to play around with the alcoholism, you want to, you know, whatever, it's, you know, nobody's stopping you. But it's not a requirement. This is, you can get on the life train. The door, you know, one of my jobs here, and going back to the thing about Saturday night, and this is our meeting, is to open the door as wide as possible to Alcoholics Anonymous, to invite you to be here, to invite you to embrace. It took me years to embrace Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I was happy to be sober. I was grateful to be an AA member. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be sober. If drugs are a person's problem and alcohol leads to drugs and you don't want to drink for that reason, we don't ask a person to identify as an alcoholic if that's not true or they don't think it's true. But if you want to be an AA member, you at least identify as, I'm Billy and I have a desire to stop drinking. That's it. Okay, in the big book there's a place, okay. Let's see, okay, sorry of that. Got in. Saw the therapist for a while more and she wanted me to go to more meetings. I went to more meetings. Then I went to meetings to the point where I didn't want to go to meetings because I promised my therapist. I wanted to go to meetings because I needed to be here and I wanted to be here and be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm going to dive into a little bit of heresy here. they wrote the book. To me, it's totally... I'm not sure if I shared it yet again. I was 2 years sober before I could comfortably use the word God for my higher power. And God is to understand God, not to lay a theology on anybody or anything like that. I'd be happy to tell you what I really got going on outside of the room, but I don't want to, I mean, it's what I have going on is like, and this is to encourage you, one of my favorite lines in the big book is, the point is we're willing to grow along spiritual lines, okay? We don't graduate here. This is, my alcoholism is now and forever. I have this condition that if I drink, a craving is going to kick in. I have no illusions about that. It's a physical condition. It doesn't have anything to do with my emotional life. It doesn't have anything to do with how I was born. There's no surgery for it. There's no pills for it. It's actually, I heard there was a pill that you could drink all you want and you won't feel a thing. And I don't know what, it protects you from craving, but it also protects you from feeling the effects of alcohol, so there's like no point, except it's deadly. But anyhow, so I have this condition, and I use the word condition because in life, along the way in sobriety, I came to identify, and this is talking about the first step, admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives have become unmanageable, that any problem I have, or any of you have, or any of you or I ever had, or anyone else outside of this room ever had, and anyone ever or ever will have any problem, all of those problems each have one common denominator. There's a solution. Mm-hmm. If there's not a solution, it's not a problem. Something can come up that seems like, oh, and it's like, wow, that seems like a problem. Okay, well, the way to clearly tell if it's a problem or not is there a solution? And if there's a solution, I'm bound to act on that. But if there's not a solution, so-and-so won't talk to me, doesn't want to be a friend, I need to respect the boundary. As far as I treat it on a daily basis, I can't let it eat me up, so it's a condition. Now, if they say hello to me, then that condition turns into, so to speak, a problem because there's a solution. I can say hello to them and so on. So it's very helpful for me to break things down that way. So it seems like a problem. There's a sure way to tell if it is, if there's a solution. So for my physical craving that kicks in if I drink, there is no solution. So that's a condition I got. Now, that in itself is not a problem. My brother-in-law has a peanut butter allergy. He has to go to the emergency room if he has peanut butter. His wife, my sister, ate a peanut butter sandwich at noontime. They kiss. She's got to go to the emergency room. They don't have peanut butter in the house. No problem. Jeez. You know, he doesn't have a craving to go to the emergency room, and he just busts out the peanut butter and runs up $1 million bill at the emergency room because he just goes for it. Okay? So having a craving for alcohol is not a problem. What the problem is in my mind, in my thinking, in my emotional, spiritual life, that I can either forget what it was like, or justify what it was like, or tell myself I was only hurting myself. You know? In other words, I got kicked out of a bad taste party at my brother's house one time, and that's a whole other story. If I was doing a two-hour talk, I'd tell you. But the fact that I ignore my problem, the fact I ignore my condition in my thinking I allow myself to ignore my condition, that's a problem. Okay? Now, how do I know it's a problem? Well, two things. Bad things happen. I drink and bad things happen. And so when bad things are happening, that's when I wonder, is that a problem or a condition? And there's a solution. If alcoholic thinking was a condition, then there never would have been Alcoholics Anonymous. The alcoholics would just, they drink, all they could think about is drinking, they drink till they die. You know, if people, like sometimes you hear people like they're impatient about recovery, I wish it happened faster, right? Oh gosh, you know, this takes so much time. I was lucky, I learned early on to take patience, although maybe it's because of that 9 years of patience I went downhill, but so I needed 9 years of patience coming back uphill. But imagine if recovery could just happen that quick, and we'd be fully restored, and just through a willingness on a spiritual level to have the past all cleaned up, it was all automatically cleaned up, we didn't have to do nothing about it, and we're whole and sober and blessed, and it only took one AA meeting to have that experience, then what do we do after the meeting? Let's go drink and celebrate. We got it. We got to figure it out. And tomorrow morning, we go to a meeting, work sober all day, maybe hit a meeting at the end of the day, go out and drink. So recovery is not that fast. It takes time. If the disease happened as fast as we wish the recovery happened, then on that first high school weekend when we drank, maybe we're dead by Monday. Maybe all the alcoholics, the disease progresses so fast that there's 10 people drinking, one of them's an alcoholic, one dies on, you know, before Monday, and everyone says, wow, he was an alcoholic, I didn't know that, you know? So I'm grateful the disease doesn't progress that fast, and I'm patient, knowing that recovery doesn't happen that fast. So I got to get to my heresy before I run out of time. So in the big book, we finally got around to writing it, and they put it together, and it's a magnificent, totally magnificent book. Okay, and I mean, it's pick a line, pick a sentence, and it's mostly applies. There's a line in there that says we're always more or less insanely drunk. Well, to me, that's a dangerous line because I wasn't always more or less insanely drunk. It was always insane that I drank, mm-hmm. and I didn't get much done. but I wasn't insanely drunk. And so that line could open the door for me to not be here because I'm not always more or less insanely drunk. Okay? And this is where the traditions come in, that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. I didn't want to go where alcohol is taking me anymore. Okay? I don't want to go there. I've been there and done that. Okay? So I'm not... what I am going to do is just share this. Okay, so on page 162, near the end of the book, they wrote this book so this solitary person in Portland or Taft, Bakersfield, Santa Maria, whatever, they got this book and they could stay sober. There wasn't no sponsorship. There wasn't sponsors. There was this book, their alcoholism, the divine inspiration that's in this book throughout, and people were able to stay sober, and to stay sober, they had to go help someone. And God put another alcoholic in their path, and they helped that person, and they helped that person, and here we are now with all these meetings. So, but it says, thus we grow, and some people say it's all in the big book. It's just in the black. Don't make anything up. Don't interpret nothing. Just read what it says there. And I think that's evidence of partial wet brain. Okay? And by that, I mean this. In here, it clearly says it's not all here. Okay, it says, thus we grow, and so can you, though you be but one man with this book in your hand. We believe and hope it contains all you will need. Okay, but it doesn't stop there. It says, to begin. We hope this has all you need to begin. Okay, and that's what they wrote. That's what they were inspired to write. Okay, on the next page, it says, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. They didn't say it's all right here, just memorize it or whatever. It says, we realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Okay? This is a dynamic way of life. This is not, like I thought when I got here, that just, if I just stay sober, have the exact same life, I'm good. Okay? But life is not static like that. We're becoming, we're being transformed. With 30 days being transformed, with however many days, and I didn't get your name on the what's your name?
Angel.
Angel, yeah, yeah. And so I'm glad you're here, you know. And anyhow, but sobriety is the starting point. Alcohol will shut off my spiritual life that quick. And I'm going to talk till 9. Is that okay? Straight up? Okay. So alcohol will shut it off right away. But in sobriety and working the steps, we are invited to participate in life. And you can look around and know that life is, there's so much about it that's flourishing. In my mind's eye, thanks to the Hubble telescope, I know there's a galaxy out there and a galaxy over there, 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 right? This place where we are, if we could see it, we wouldn't be able to speak. It's so beautiful. Okay? Now, the unspeakable beauty where we dwell in our minds, we also need to take care of details of survival and so on. And so we get sidetracked. Like, I know at all times that I'm in a just unspeakably beautiful place. Now, the circumstances that come up that make me think that sucks or that sucks or that sucks, but it doesn't change the larger truth of things. So anyhow, and I'm going by that clock there, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little, okay? Now I'm going to tell you three things I would change in the big book, and someday maybe I'll try to go through the process to actually do it. One is where it says God as we understand him. You know, it was started out of Christian practices, Christian beliefs, and I'm a Christian, but Alcoholics Anonymous is not a place for theological issues. It's a place where people are welcome as they are, even with no higher power. And we want to help you not to have my higher power, to have the higher power that speaks to you when you reach into your higher power. And so I would change God as we understand God instead of God as we understand him. And just open it, wide open. So there's no issue on that. Second is the steps. I wouldn't, there's one step I would change, but I would change the order of the steps. They say the steps are numbered, so you do them in order, right? Some people say that. I would never say that, except quoting someone else. You're all here tonight, and if you cut someone off on the highway or you're rude to someone in the checkout line, we encourage you to apologize. Don't screw up. To me, I recognize that if I'm screwing up, I'm making my eighth step list longer. I'm going to have more amends I need to make. So we encourage you to do the tenth step as part of your way of life right now. Be aware of your behavior, and if you're wrong, admit it. Clean it up right now. You don't have to wait until you finish, till you get to the end of your ninth step, and then by that time, you still got, you know, 5 more weeks of work to do to make up for the stuff you didn't do along the way, you know? Okay? So the idea that you have to do them in order is a, there's logic behind it, but it's not entirely true, okay? But the first step, admitted we were powerless, that's the condition, and that our lives become unmanageable, that's, I ignored my condition in my thinking. And unmanageability was the evidence of that. But what happened, what caused the unmanageability was I ignored my condition in my thinking. Okay, so through the first 9 steps, in order. When a person finishes their 9th step, say there wasn't a big book, and I'm just telling you how it is, how it works, and I say, okay, so then we made direct amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And then someone says, is that all? And I say, no. And they say, well, what's next? Okay. Well, I would say, seek through prayer and, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, the God that we turn our will and lives over to at the third step. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Anything else? Yes. Continue to take personal inventory. And when we're wrong, promptly admit it. Anything else? Yes. If you want to keep it, and you've had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, carry this message to other alcoholics and practice these principles in all your affairs. Anything else? No, that's it. You do that, and one day at a time, you're home free. But I would switch the order on those steps. And then just one other thing, and I'm done. Sought through prayer and meditation. And the thing I just shared, I realized just a few months ago, this thing I just realized yesterday. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry it out. And I was 8 years sober when I saw the word only in there, and that really helped me a lot. But anyhow, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. For me, when I'm thinking of that step, it's sought through prayer, meditation, and action to improve my conscious contact with God. Go out, you know, people ask me, how do you know if it's God's will? Well, go toward that action, and you'll find out, you know. But to just sit and pray and meditate, and then you get up and you're done praying and meditating, you're going to live your day and whatever, and then you get to your AA meeting and you say, you know, it's like that's not what we have here for you is a doorway that you can walk through, and you can, to me, the 11th step is where the rubber meets the road. And thank you, Kevin, for asking. I had no idea I was going to be talking today, and but this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and we don't have to die from alcoholism. I'm glad you're here. Thank you.
Thank you, Billy. Appreciate that. Can we have another hand for Billy? Now I'm going to turn the meeting back over to our secretary.